الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، بارئ الخلائق أجمعين، وباعث الأنبياء والمرسلين، الذي بعد فلا يرى وقرب فشهد النجوى، تبارك وتعالى. ثم الصلاة والسلام والتحية والإكرام على خاتم النبيين وسيد المرسلين وشفيع المذنبين، الرسول المؤيد والنبي الممجد المصطفى الأمجد أبي القاسم محمد. وعلى آله الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين المظلومين، لا سيما على الإمام المنتظر وحجة الله الثاني عشر ابن العسكري المنتظر، ولعنة الله على أعدائهم أجمعين من الآن إلى قيام يوم الدين. أما بعد، فإن الله الصادق العليم قال في كتابه الكريم القرآن الحكيم: بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. وإذ يتلقى المتلقيان عن اليمين وعن الشمال قعيد، ما يلفظ من قول إلا لديه رقيب عتيد. صلوات. Brothers and sisters, salamu alaykum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Into the seventh night of our discussion. And as you must have observed, that as the nights pass, we tend to move from one phase to the other. In our discussion entitled Qiyam, the countdown to eternity, because this day about whom we've been discussing for the past six nights and 3-4 nights from now is actually a countdown towards eternity, because the events that take place on that day would be a culmination of the efforts of all that we do in this world, waiting for the final judgment of God, leading us towards eternity. That eternity about which numerous verses of the Quran have stated, the most prominent and the most common one that most of us know is what is stated in Ayatul Kursi, Suratul Baqarah, verses 255 and 256, wherein it has always been mentioned, Hum fiha khalidun. And all this entire structure of man, from the time he has been created in the spiritual realms, and then he is brought down, and he is brought down into this world, and then asked to lead this world, and then he goes back to the hereafter, about whom it has been recommended that whenever you see somebody dying, whenever you see somebody going from this world, do not worry about him as much as you worry about yourself. And that is why it is said that when you see somebody dying, immediately call out, Inna lillahi wa inna ilayhi raji'un. The words come out, Inna, we, lillahi, belong to Allah, wa inna, we, ilayhi raji'un, shall return to him. The man has died is somebody else. Those who know Arabic, the term for the third person is Hova. But Allah says, at this point of time, when this man has passed, do not say, he belongs to God, and to Allah is his return. Remind yourself, say, Inna Lillah, we belong to God, and to him we return, because you need to take an example from the life of this man, that he was in this world before our eyes, and now he's passing away, the same situation is going to take care with us. And in this entire journey, that man will go back to his Lord, for that final accounting that we will again be discussing, whereupon the ruling will pass, whereupon a commitment will be made, whereupon a judgment will be decided as to this man, because he has to be hum fiha khalidun, he has to live forever and ever. The important thing is that this living forever and ever, this living for eternity, which is why the title is Countdown to Eternity. Whatever ruling takes place and it is decided, now that ruling will be with this man, adhering to this man, clinging to this man for eternity. In which house of God is that eternity taking place? Is it paradise or it is hell? In this case, we have to understand one thing very clearly, and that thing is that for God it doesn't make a difference whether somebody goes to heaven or somebody goes to hell. For him it doesn't make a difference. He's got two houses. It is exactly in the case, like if a person has two houses, one a palatial mansion, 15 bedroom house with a swimming pool and a big car park with 15 cars that can be parked inside, and another house that is a hut, roof leaking with the slightest of rain, the water comes inside, slightest of snow it comes inside, a little movement and you find this door creaking and that door hinging, things falling apart, insects moving around. Two houses. If somebody were to stay in the house, he would say, I have no problem. You stay wherever you want. I have got another location. But this is one hut, dilapidated in ruins. That is one palatial mansion. Whichever one you want, I will give you the keys. For him, it doesn't matter that this person who's coming to ask for him to stay goes into a hut, the dilapidated ruin, or he goes into the palatial mansion. But it does make a difference to that man who is going into a house. Similarly is the case with Allah and with ourselves. For him it doesn't make a difference. Just as Jannah belongs to him, Jahannam belongs to him. For him it doesn't matter, he gives the permission for me to go to heaven or to hell. But it does make a difference to me, because it depends upon what I want to achieve. If I want to have those things that we are discussing, then I might want to go to hell. But no, if I want to live a life of ease and comfort, which is not the topic of this series of lectures. And if you observe that we have been focusing intentionally on the other aspect, which is adab. Because in the Islamic concept of explanation and guidance, there are two means that have been used. And I've mentioned this in the first and the second lecture that we have. One is referred to as tabshir, giving glad tidings, talking about the rahmat of God, talking about His bounties, talking about His graces, talking about the favors that will come with man when he is at his merciful best. And there is another thing which is referred to as inzar, the same carrot policy and the same stick policy. But this time we have selected to select the concept of inzar, the concept of stick. Because if you look at the Quran, there are, Quran has said, we have sent the prophets, mubashirin wa mundirin. They've got two works. One, they are given this responsibility of warning and instilling fear into the people, mundirin. At the same time, they are mubashirin. They are being given the responsibility of talking about the mercy of God. But when it comes to the Holy Prophet, you will find only one terminology used. And Allah says, O Prophet Muhammad, innama anta mundir. Those who are aware with the Arabic language would realize, this innama anta mundir is a kind of an emphatic discussion, an emphasis referred to as taqid. Allah says, innama, surely you, my Prophet, anta mundir, you have been sent as a warner. Because it is this fear that changes persons. And having discussed this aspect, that man will go back and it will be finally concluded where he wants to go. This entire discussion assumes an important significance and meaning. But I have stopped at a certain point last night. But before I can continue, there is felt a need to explain one aspect. There is felt a need to understand one of the dictates of Islam. Last Friday, in the Friday prayers, in the khutbah, I had explained two of the tenets, very important keys of Islam. Today is the third one. See, when you consider the sins and the offenses committed by man, all sins, all offenses are not of the same nature, huh? They are not of the same category. In broad sense, based on one classification, the sins are categorized into two categories. One are those sins that man performs because of his relationship directly to God. That means man as an individual animal, man as a person by himself, disregarding all his associations and relationship with people around. This man as a makhluk, with his God as a khaliq, has certain sins that he does. So for example, he lies. Lying is a sin. You are in the house, you tell your son, somebody calls up, says, Baba is not here. Happens, isn't it? Yes, it happens. That is a sin committed by man with respect to his own God. Or he does not pray salat. This not praying salat is a sin between himself and his creator. One category of sins that is associated between makhluk and khaliq, the creator and the creation. This is because man is considered as an individual animal. But man has another dimension to his life, because he's a social animal. At times, sheikh is just sheikh, as a makhluk, as a creation of the khaliq. He's got his own relation, he's got his own sins. He at times opposes out of ignorance, at times out of the nafsani khwaishat and desires. But at times, Shaykh is not just alone. He's a father. He's a brother. He's a son. He's a grandson. In this kind of man, or this category of man, or this identity of man, in which he's a social animal, at times he commits sins that has an impact not just between himself and in his God. It transgresses from the self to the other party. That means now the sins that he commits has a bearing not on just himself. It hurts the others. It troubles the others. It has an impact on the other. And when you consider these two scenarios, that's individual sins committed between God and man, sins committed which has an impact on the social life of man and on other individuals other than this person, then you find Islam behaving differently with respect to both these sins. Islam has a different way of approaching both these sins. The approach to both these sins are not same. So you will find in one category, when somebody lies, Allah says, you've committed a sin. I have told you not to sin. You have sinned. Now you have to expiate that sin. So do astaghfirullah and I will forgive you. You have forgotten your prayers. Do astaghfirullah. Do the qada, I will forgive you. Those who miss out their prayers, just doing qada is not enough. In addition to doing the qada of the prayers missed out, you have to do istighfar. Because we have violated the rulings of God. If that istighfar is not done, that sin still stands, Now when you have this different categories, the second category in which the punishment is meted out, the sin has an effect on the others, Allah will just not say that do istighfar. So for example, you've got somebody who has stolen somebody's item. So Allah will not say just do istighfar and that punishment is finished or the sin is gone. They first return that item, then do istighfar. In the punishments that are given out for the sins of these two categories, again we find differences. The punishment that is meted out to the second category, where a person's actions has an effect on somebody else, is severer and more severe than the sins which a person commits in the eyes of God. And that is why it is said, and we will come to this, that when a person shaheed or becomes shaheed, when a person dies in the battlefield in the way of God, all those sins that are there between God and man, Allah forgives. But the sins that a man has done to his brother, mu'min brother, or a Muslim brother, is not forgiven. We will come to this. But what I want to explain is that in these two categories of sins, when God wants to approach them, either in His actions or in His punishments, there is a major difference. The importance and the severity is given to those sins in which the effect transgresses out. What was the need for this discussion? What was the need for spending 10 minutes on this? Because of this. If you remember last night, when we were discussing the punishments, and we had said that the time comes when a person being put into the grave, and all the effects, all the phenomena, all the events, all the occurrences that take place, eventually the time comes that now he has to stand up before his Lord. وَيَوْمٌ نُفِقَ فِي السُّورِ فَتَعْتُونَ أَفْوَاجًا. When the blow of the trumpet shall be blown, you shall be called out in groups, in fauj, in groups. And we have discussed the tradition of the Prophet, whereby the Prophet said, at the time when people will be called out, 10 groups will be separated aside. Discussion is gone, we don't want to discuss this. At that time I had said that in addition to this tradition, there will be several other groups that will be brought out. And as we were discussing those groups, we had come to a point where we had said that if individuals are looking at something that is haram, individuals are utilizing this bounty of God that is called the eyes for looking at something that God has forbidden, he becomes deserving of the punishment of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. At that time we had said that those twigs of thorns being pushed into the eyes and taken out, we don't want to discuss that in detail. That is finished. From there I want to go to two or three other sins that are not individual between man and his God, but those are the sins which has an effect on society, as a result of which the punishment that has been prescribed, the punishment that has come to us from our masoom, is immense, extravagant, extremely intense. So when we say that people, if they look and use their eyes for something haram, that will be the punishment. Now we have subsidies, or we have the subsidiary rulings with regards to this. And the subsidiary ruling with regards to the eye is specifically stated in this manner, that those who do the normal haram acts, watching movies, pornography and all the other things, they will be subjected to the punishment that we said yesterday last night. But one punishment or one sin of the eyes that have been singled out is the one that has social implications. And tradition says, amongst these people who have been using the favor of the eyes, the benefit of the eyes, the bounty of the eyes for haram acts, one of which has been specifically singled out, is casting dirty looks upon the wives, upon the ladies, upon the women folk of other people. I think those who have been utilizing their eyes, who feast their eyes, certain translations, if you look, it is that way. They feast their eyes upon the physical features of the women folk of somebody else. See, at one time somebody lies. At one time somebody does not fast. He just harms himself. But when you start, or when a person starts looking and transgressing and violating the chastity and the modesty of ladies of other family folks and other people, this has social implications. And tradition says, if people, and this is so important for us to know, specifically our youth to go to the universities. Universities in the West, where there's a different culture. We follow a different culture. When we talk about difference in culture, we are not at war with anybody. We are not at war with any culture. There is their culture. We have got our culture. We respect their culture. We expect them to respect our culture. But at the same time, if we respect their culture, it does not mean that we compromise our culture and our ideology. So if a girl, a 20-year-old beautiful girl in the university, may wear the skimpiest of dresses, we have no problems with that. But if a Muslim boy happens to oogle at that girl with passions arousing within him, we've got a problem with it. We've not got a problem with their culture. We've got problems with people who violate our culture. And this is why this discussion is going on. Tradition says, if people feast their eyes upon the physical features of the women folk of families other than themselves or other than their wives on the day of judgment, in addition to this punishment, tradition says, you know, pokers, skewers, the rods of iron will be brought out. They will be put it into fire. It will start to heat. When it begins to heat, it will become hot. It will be heated more till it becomes red hot. When it is just about to become molten, it will be taken. Now this is the fire of hell, remember. We are talking about that same fire about how the Jibreel has talked. These will be taken. It will be inserted into the eyes. That heat of the skewer, that heat of the rod, together with the pointedness of the rod, it will go inside. It will melt to this flesh. This is fat. This is what Imam Ali alayhi salam says. He's saying, you are so arrogant. You know, you are a person who talks with a piece of flesh, who listens by piece of bone, and who sees by piece of fat. This is fat in the eyes. That skewer that is heated red hot, poked into the eyes, goes straight through. But what happens? لا يموت فيها ولا يحيا. You're not going to die. You're not going to live in that place. Automatically, كلما نضجت جلودهم جلودهم بدلناهم جلودا غيرها. As soon as things go bad, we will replace it. We will return it to its original form. Why? لَيَذُوقُ الْعَذَابِ Quran says. So that every time that fire poker or skewer is pushed into the eyes, the punishment felt by Shaykh is every time of the same intensity as he feels it the first time it goes into the eyes. Because there, لَمَنِ الْمُلْكَ الْيَوْمِ لِلَّهِ الْوَاحِدِ الْقَهَارِ That is the ruling of God. That is the command of God. Let us not be deceived by the concept of loving God. God is loving, He is Rahman, He is Rahuf, He is Rahim, very true, but He is Qahhar and Jabbar also. And this aspect, that introduction was coming to this point, that one thing starts off with the eyes and then goes on to something bigger. What is that bigger thing which in Islamic terminology referred to as zina? In English referred to as adultery or fornication. That means illicit physical and sexual relationship with a woman a person is not supposed to have that relationship with. There are certain sins that are very heinous in the eyes of God, very odious in the eyes of God. Certain traditions, in order to explain those heinousness of the crime, the magnitude of the crime, come up with these verses or these sentences. That the arch of God shakes. One of the sins is zina. One of the sins is fornication. One of the sins is adultery. A young boy and a young girl. Or a middle-aged man and a middle-aged woman. Or a married man and a married woman. Referring, getting related, getting involved in a physical relationship. This is what zina is. Saying the arch of God moves. Because of the wrath of God. But it is the sunnah of God that in this world we will not do anything. But we will wait for you when you come over there. Because tradition says, on the day of judgment, as these afwaja, forge when this group comes, people are getting involved into their own problems. You heard yesterday, people coming blind, people coming as monkeys, people coming as pigs, people suspended in trees of fire, people being poked with those thorny twigs, people being pushed into the ice skewers and iron rods of heat. All of them in their own state. And this is what Imam Sajjad says, when I come out and looking at things, everybody is in their own state. فِي شَعْنِي غَيْرَ شَعْنِي Everybody is involved, engrossed in their own problems. Nobody is worried about the others. Tradition says, all this is happening when the command of God will come. Alright, bring that next group. When the next group comes, as soon as that group enters the plains of Mahshar, tradition says a smell so foul, so odious, so loathsome will spread through that entire Mahshar. to such an extent that tradition says all those people who were involved in the punishment that they were being subjected to, all of them will forget their punishment because the stench, the foul smell, the odor of these individuals that have been brought into the plains of Qiyamah would be so overwhelmingly great that the stench would be an adab that would overcome all the other adab that they would be doing. And as soon as that stench and smell would come, it would be of such intensity and magnitude that people would not be able to breathe. All of a sudden, that person hanging in flames on the tree, that person in psychological pressure in the form of pigs and monkeys will forget about that and they will complain to God, "Oh Allah, what is this new adab that has come upon us? What is this new sin that we have done that we are being subjected to?" At that time, tradition says, one voice will call out and say, "Do you know why the stench is coming?" And they will say, "No, we don't know, but we find the stench more punishing than all the other punishments that we are being subjected to." So they will, the caller will ask out, "Do you know that this is because of certain individuals who have just been made to enter the plains of Qiyamah?" And they would say, "Oh, whoever is talking, what is their sin?" At that time, that person will call out, "These are fornicators and adulterers who have been engaging in illicit sexual relationship, and now that as they are brought into the plains of Qiyamah, the stench that is emanating from their private organs is so much that you have forgotten your adab because of the intensity of the stench." Tradition says the stench will be so enormously overwhelming that the words that have been used in the tradition is that if a person were to be at a distance of 500 years, he would be inconvenienced by that smell. 500 years means what, you know? In the olden days, there was no measurement speaking yardstick to inform the people of huge distances. So they would use the distance in the form of years. 500 years, 30 years, 1 year. What is this 1 year? This 1 year is a distance which a horse at a galloping pace, which currently if you measure, it's around 30 miles or around 50 kilometers an hour at a gallop. The distance that that horse, an Arabian horse, would travel in a distance of 1 year if he starts off continuously, incessantly, without stopping. The distance that he would reach in 1 year is called 1 year distance. This tradition says the smell from the private organs of a fornicator would be so odious that individuals at a distance of 500 years would become inconvenienced with that smell. And a person who indulges in zina, once he goes to take ghusl, or if he is a non-Muslim, he goes to take a shower, when the water falls on his body, because now he's either going to take a shower or he's going to do the ghusl janabah. As that water falls on his body and that water from the body falls onto the ground, tradition says that ground cries up in pain and raises itself in complaint and saying, "God, do la'anat upon this man that is casting this dirty water upon me, which is coming from a body which has become najis because of an illicit sexual relationship." It's not a joke. But we also have to realize these things need to be told to our youths. They have been exposed to things that we feel very common. But we need to tell them what is the reality. And this is not just the youths, huh? Tradition says this is so bad because it is having social implications. It is wrecking somebody's house. It is creating discord within families. Because of this man trying to act like a Casanova. Good looks given to him by God. He wants to use it to impress other people's ladies and girls and wives. But this is also a responsibility of the ladies, because there's a tradition which says that on the day of judgment, the only support, the only help will be that of God. And by means of God, through the Ahlul Bayt. We will discuss this completely, one lecture, the night of Ashura. the Ahlul Bayt. But other than the Ahlul Bayt, the only absolute merciful entity is Allah. Tradition says, on the day of judgment, there will be three categories of people. La yanduru ilayhim Allah. On the day of judgment, there will be three categories of people. God will not want to look at them. God will not want to talk to them. Tradition says one of those categories, because we only pick up that part of a hadith which is relevant to our topic. Otherwise, we'll just keep going away. Tradition says three categories of people on which, with whom Allah will not talk. You know what it means when Allah will not talk? When Allah will not look? We are talking about a day when we have been repeatedly stating all the reins of control lie in one hand, the hand of Allah. Limanil mulk al yawm, he keeps calling out. When the only person who can help says, I don't want to talk to you. You've got a problem with your house. You want to go to city council. Probably it's being repossessed. There's only one person who can answer you, the official. You want to go to him, he says, I don't want to meet you. What happens to you? You can see your house being taken away. The person who can make a difference says, I don't want to see you. Where do you go? You can't go anywhere. On that day, it's even more of a magnitude because there is nobody higher. When he said, I don't want to talk to you, I don't want to look at you. Who's that? One category out of three are ladies who are married but are fornicating. Ladies who are infidelity. Ladies who are not loyal to their husbands. They got a husband, they got eyes for somebody else. They've got a husband, they want somebody else. On that day of judgment, God says, I don't want to look at you. Stay away from me. And God knows then who's going to help them. But this is what goes on. And as we come to this aspect, because it has social implications, again we refer to this section. Because on the day of judgment, a command will come. Alright, and this is the last group, because we cannot go on and on. There are so many groups. Get this group, a group will become, or will be formed. Tradition says, the Holy Prophet saw, when he went on Mi'raj, the punishments, saying there will be small little cabins, elevator-like. But they're not ordinary cabins. Those are cabins made up of fire. Flames coming, spewing out, made of fire. The bottom, the top, the sides. And people are being pushed into it. Ladies and gents. Males and females. Small little, as soon as the door is closed, the whole body begins to burn. You can't run, you can't escape, because it is closed. Cubicle. Prophet asked Hadhrat Jibreel, who are these people that are being punished in this manner? Small little cubicles made up of fire. As soon as you go inside, you start getting burned from top to bottom. No, not burned. You start burning from top to bottom. Who are these? Jibreel says, Ya Rasulullah, these are girls, these are ladies who would not wear hijab in this world. When they would not wear hijab, they would be exposing their beauty to people other than their husbands. And remember, the beauty, the sexuality, the sensuality, everything that is got with the physical body of a lady is only the sole prerogative of the husband. Not the brother, not the father, nobody except the husband. Not exposing to husbands, to the others, everybody ogling, everybody looking, dirty looks, evil looks, sexual looks, that body becomes najis. It has to become tahir, it has to become pak. How do you become pak? With water? No, in the akhirat you become pak. Means of fire. Stay inside till you become patakar. The question that Hazrat Jibreel was asked by the Prophet is, I understand, okay, that these cubicles are for ladies who don't wear hijab. But you said ladies and males are pushed inside. Who are these males that are going? Hijab is for ladies. He's saying these are those males who had control over those ladies and they could have forced them to wear hijab, but because of social obligations or something else, they did not force their ladies. Their husbands who could force their wife to wear hijab, they said, don't worry, don't wear. Fathers who could have forced their daughters to wear hijab, but said, don't wear, you're going to college, doesn't matter. Brothers who could have forced the sisters, wear hijab. It doesn't matter, go.
Because of the fact that you could have saved this girl or this woman or this wife or this sister or this daughter from this punishment of fire, but intentionally, for reasons other than shar'i reasons, you stopped them or you did not stop them, just as they are offended or they have committed an offense, you too are a partner in crime. If they burn, I burn too. These are realities that are taking place. These are truth that will happen. But as we keep moving, we have to keep moving forward. Because day of judgment is not just this. There's so many other things. And we keep moving forward. Why do you think they've been brought up? Afwaja, folks, why? Because it's Christmas Eve, so that they can have turkey over there. No turkey over there. Because when people are being asked to get up, people are being asked to stand up before God. This is that occasion for which that entire drama has been played. That entire planning has been done. That you are going to be created. And then you're going to be sent into this world. And then you will be made to live into this world. And then you will go back for this day. Because now we are going to stand, you, me, and everybody that is there in this universe, we're going to stand before God and account and tell Him what we have done in this world. This is the occasion when Quran says, "Wa inna lillahi, we belong to God, wa ilayhi raji'un." Raji'un for what? Because now He's going to account. I gave you this life, I want an account for what you have done with it. A very immense measure, scenario, realm and a domain. Because tradition says, once this order comes up, and the trumpet is blown, and everybody is raised up, everybody will be brought out in this state. Till a phase is reached, it will be said, now is the time for accounting. Every person. God, with every person, individually, everybody thinking, God is only talking to me. This is God. I can't talk with two people at a time. The entire mankind, from Adam till the end, everybody is standing on a plane without shelter. On a plane which is live and intelligent. Each one in its own state. Being accounting and accounting his deeds to God. Everybody talking to God. Everybody thinking God is talking to me personally. But before that accounting takes place, there is another step. You can't have an accounting till you don't have an account book, right? Everybody's got an account book, which is referred to as the book of deeds. Everything that man is doing in this world, everything that man intends to do in this world, every action, from the biggest action to the smallest action, is being recorded by means of a camcorder and a microphone. This camera that is there over here, it is monitoring every movement I'm making. It is recording every movement that I make. This mic is recording every word that I speak out. For how long? An hour, 10 minutes, 15 minutes? Over here, as you and me sit, and over the entire universe, wherever there is a creation of God, there is a microphone, there is a camcorder, from the time a person is born till the time he sees Malakul Maut, it is on 24/7. And various names are given to this. Every act that man does. No. Big acts, salat, written. Fasting, written. Sitting down, written. Drinking water, written. No, that is also too much. Moving your eyes, written. Looking here and there with your eyes, written. Blinking of the eyes, written. That's also too much. Thoughts going into the mind, written. Recorded. Not just recorded for archiving. To be shown to you. Because this book will be opened and then man will be asked to answer for every deed that he did from the time he became baligh. A very amazing scenario. Because tradition says when man will be brought, with him will be this book of deeds, which Quran and traditions mention several names. At times you have said this is a kitab, which is a book. At times it is called Zubar. At times it is called Ta'ir. Ta'ir means bird. He's got an amazing name for this. One of the names for this book of deeds, in which every act that man does is written, from the time he becomes balig, and the taklif of shar comes upon him. Everything that he does, every action that he takes, every thought that moves into his mind, written down. The name that is given is Ta'ir, one of the names in the Quran. Ta'ir means a bird. At the time of the olden Arabian Peninsula, the Arabs had a superstition. Like you see some of these superstitions in India, that if a cat passes by, you say it's a bad omen, it's an evil omen. Or you pass under a ladder over here, say it's an evil omen, brings bad fortune. In amongst the Arabs, they had this. They would seek omens from birds flying. Oh, I'm going out, the bird is flown from left to right, today is going to be a bad day. Or as I'm going, the bird is flown from right to left, today the work is going to work out. Allah uses the same word. He's saying this book is fire, is a bird. Indicating what? Don't look at birds and try to determine your destiny. Your destiny is going to be determined by this book, which is based on actions that you do. But what is written in this book? To what measure? To what meticulousness? I will not explain anything myself. One tradition of the sixth Imam, Sadiq Ali Muhammad Ja'far ibn Muhammad ibn Sadiq, alayhi salatu wa salam. A companion sits with the sixth Imam. Says, what is this book of deeds? What will happen? How does it work out on the day of judgment? The sixth Imam says, إِذَا كَانَ يَوْمُ الْقِيَامَةِ دُفِعَ إِلَى الْإِنسَانِ كِتَابَهُ. He's saying, on the day of judgment, a book of deeds of that man, for every man that is there on that plains, the book will be given to him. And it will be said, وَخِيلَ لَهُ إِخْرَى. It will be said to him, read from this book. The Imam is telling the companion, the Rabi. The Rabi saying, قُلْت. I said, وَهُوَ يَعْرُفُ مَا فِيهِ. Would he know what is inside this book? Imam says, my friend, when this book he opens, وَيَذُكُرُهُ كُلَّ مَا أَعْمَلْ. Whatever he did, he will be remembered. Then he says, you know what does it mean? كُلَّمَا كُلَّ لَحْذَةٍ. Every moment of his life. وَكُلَّ مَشْيٍ. Every step that he takes. وَكُلَّ نَقْلَ قَدْمٍ. وَكُلَّ قَلِمَةٍ. Every word, every step, every action, every moment of his life that he was working, that he was doing, that he was contemplating in this world would be over there. يَذَكُرُهُ. He will remember. And then Imam says that he will remember in a measure as if كَمَا يَعْمَلُ السَّاعَةِ. As if he has done those things exactly at that time when he's reading that book. It will be so clear, it will be so manifest, it will be so vivid and so lucid that when he's going through it, he will think as if he has done those acts right now. What acts? Min kalimatin, words spoken. Min mashin, steps taken. Min nakla qadmin, one step after the other. Min lahzatin, every moment written over there. And that is why, in order to explain what state will take place for people who have not been in good books with God, who have not been following God, when they see their books, they will be opening their books. Then Quran explains to us what scenario will take place. He says, on that day, يَوْمَ تَرَى الْمُجْرَمِينَ. On that day, you will see the criminals, مُشْفَقِينَ مِمَّا فِي. When they open their books, and as they are turning the pages, the things that they will see, the things that they will read, مُشْفَقِينَ فِي مِمَّا فِي. When they see this, they will be overtaken by fright. They will be overtaken by apprehension. They will be kabisa, in absolute terror. And then Quran says, in this state of terror, وَيَقُولُونَ, they will say, مَا لِهَذَا الْكِتَابِ لَا يُغَادِرُ صَغِيرَةً وَلَا كَبِيرَةً إِلَّا أَحْسَاهَا. Ajeeb book this is. amazing book this is. Everything that I'm reading, from the biggest of things that Hajj that I did, from the smallest of winkings that I winked somebody, everything is in there. Nothing has been overlooked. Nothing has been omitted. Nothing has been forgotten. La yugadiru. It is not omitted. Sagiratan, a smallest things. Wala kabiratan, illa ahsaha. Everything is there. Ya waylana. A woe upon us. When you have certain things before you, and this will be one of the frights that will be there on. Because when man sees his book, there will be two frights that will overtake him. When he opens his book, there will be two frights. One, he knows that now whatever he's done is there recorded. You can't deny it because he's seeing it. At night when the parents are not at home, this is what I did. When my wife is there at home and this I'm at work, this is what I did with the secretary. Everything written. One, he knows he has to account for it. But the important thing is not accounting for it. At times you've got that sense of complacency that, specifically in this world, that all the acts that we do are not exposed to everybody. We've got at times lead a dual personality, a personal lives. We are different when we are in the group. We are different when we are alone in the house. When we are alone in the house, we are very rude with our wives. When you're with the family, when you're with the friends, please can you give me food? I'm hungry. Dual lives, we know it. As long as that second life of ours, the black life of ours, that dirty life of ours is hidden, we are comfortable. What happens if by some means that black life becomes exposed to the people? This is what is going to take place on the Day of Judgment. Because now this book is written in a manner so clear that he sees his personal life, which is an evil life, and the life that he was using to show the people. As long as those hidden life, we are very comfortable. But the moment we realize something is going to be seen, we put up a very good front. Over there, that there will be two fears. One, that he will have to account to God, yes. But the important thing is that will eat him up and eat me up, is that I have to account for everything. Those things that I thought hidden is now becoming apparent. All those things that I did not want to become exposed to the people will now become exposed. But this thing that will take place over there, and that is why it is said that these mujrimeen, when they see their evil deeds, they will say, Ya waylatana, woe upon us, what has happened? This has everything. Things that we did not want exposed is there. Things which we led a dual life is there. And all of this will have to be accounted. But this thing that will take place has a precursor. Because the ruling of God, the functioning of God is such that there will be nothing left to chance. Nobody will have any means to object. And this aspect of witnessing, and this is why it is said in the Quran, وَإِذْ يَتَلَقَّ الْمُتَلَقِّيَانِ عَنِ الْيَمِينِ وَعَنِ الشِّمَالِ. It's saying when these two people, when these two angels are waiting to receive, وَإِذْ يَتَلَقَّ الْمُتَلَقِّيَانِ عَنِ الْيَمِينِ وَعَنِ الشِّمَالِ قَعِيدٍ. They're waiting, they're sitting to record everything. مَا يَلْفَظُ مِنْ قَوْلٍ إِلَّا وَلَدَيْهِ الرَّقِيبٌ وَعَتِيدٌ. Everything that man does, every word that he utters, the two angels are sitting to write it down. And how are they sitting to write it down? There's this incident of Imam Khomeini. It becomes very difficult for us to understand. Everything means what? Everything in a very short term. Think about that dual life everybody leaves. If all of that were to come in front, that is what it means, everything. Imam Khomeini, after his death, after a period of time, comes into the dream of his son, said Ahmed. After the negotiation, after the normal talk and conversation, he says, Ya Ahmed, be very careful. Sing about what? He's saying about whatever you do. Because whatever you do is being recorded. Everything that you do will be shown to you. So said Ahmed asks, Baba, what do you mean everything?
this incident says, he raises his hands.
Says, yes, Ahmed, if you raise your hands, it will be recorded.
He raises his hands.
You raise your hands, it is recorded and it will be shown to you. At this point of time, in the 7th of Muharram, Sheikh, your hand was over here. There is no way to object and deny. Remember what Imam Sadiq says? Every person that comes up will have two angels. Sa'iq, one who pushes the people, preventing them from fleeing. The other, Shaheed, he's got this entire book. Don't deny anything. Everything that you do is there in this book. Where does the start of the writing of the book? Is it only the angels that write? Allah says, no. We will make sure that there is no impartiality. Or there is no partiality, there is no bias. Tradition says, this book that is written starts much before the day of judgment. Listen to this tradition. Today we got a lot of time. Tomorrow is Saturday, Friday, holiday, Christmas Eve. You have to enjoy Christmas Eve. Hiya, let's enjoy. Tradition of Salman Farsi. Salman Farsi, who doesn't know about Salman Farsi? Because of his rank with the Prophet. The Prophet told him once, that Salman, normally this doesn't happen with everybody. But Salman, you're different. Because Salman minna Ahlul Bayt. You see, Salman, I will tell you one thing. Before you die, if you want to know that your death is coming close to you, you're about to die, I will give you a criterion. I'll give you a yardstick. If this yardstick gets fulfilled, then realize that your death is coming very near. Saying, Ya Rasulullah, what is that? Saying, nearing to your death when you go to a graveyard, and when you give salams to the inmates and the inhabitants of the grave, one grave will split, a sound will come out, and the dead person will talk to you. Once this happens, realize your death is imminent, very soon. Now this tradition is narrated by Asbagh ibn Nubata, another very great companion of Imam Ali alayhi salam. Asbagh ibn Nubata says, I have some water please. Asbagh ibn Nubata says, once I went to Salman's house and I found him very sick. Seeing after a few days when I went again, I found him even more sick. And he happened to be in hindsight then he says, that I realized afterwards that this was the same disease in which he died. But this time when I come to Salman, he tells me, Asbagh, can you do me a favor please? Saying, yes. He's saying, I have been told by the Prophet that when my death will come, and if I go to the Qabristan and I give salams to the inhabitants of the grave, one of them would talk to me, which is an indication that I will die soon. Can you do me a favor? Saying, what? He's saying, bring me a bed, put me on it, put on me a white cloth as is usually done with the mauta, with a deceased person, and take me to that Qabristan. He was in Madain at that time. Asbagh says, Salman, if you say it's my command, I will take you. So he gets four people, he gets a bed, puts Salman onto the bed, lifts that sarir, lifts the bed, takes him to the Qabristan. Now this tradition says, as they enter the Qabristan, they put him down. Salman says, no, not like this. Make me face near the Qibla. So they turn him and put him near the Qibla. As they put him, he says, As-salamu alaykum, ya ahl al-qubur. O people of the graves, O people of this graveyard, salamun alaykum. This is Salman addressing you. Asbagh says, when the first time he says, there's no reply. Second time Salman says, As-salamu alayka ya ahl al-qubur. Salman is sending his salams. This is the same Salman about whom the Prophet had said that if Salman, you're going to die, your death is going to be near. And if you go into the graveyard, and if you talk to a people of the grave, one person from the grave will talk to me. I want to know, has my death neared, or has it come near or not? If it is this the time that I have to die, then I'm expecting somebody to speak to me. Is there anybody from amongst you who's going to speak to me? Hardly had his words finished that they heard a rumbling sound from one corner, and a sound came, wa alaykum salam ya Salman, we are hearing you and we are giving our reply to you, because as per the prophecy of the Prophet, your death is near and I have been commanded to answer your question. Ask me whatever you want to ask. And from here starts a very lengthy tradition. He asks for Salman, I'm not going to recite the whole thing. Initial part, we come to the relevant portion of this hadith, relevant to our talk. Salman asks him, first tell me, are you the inmates of the paradise or the inhabitants of hell? That person says, Alhamdulillah, I am of the person which has been graced by the mercy and forgiveness of God, and I am in a good state. Then he says, Sifli al-Maut, tell me, how has death been for you? See, you asked me a big thing, Salman. You asked me a very big thing. And then he goes into a big description of what happened at the time of death, and what happens when the soul was removed, and what happens after the soul was removed, and the punishment and the pain and the trouble that he had to undergo. And then he starts off narrating every step that takes place until he comes to this point that I pick up for relevance to our talk. And then he says that they put me into the grave after the ghusl, after the kafan, after the salat. Now it's a time for dafan. They put me into the grave. After putting me into the grave, they put mud upon me. All of them go away. I find myself into a house that is constrained, that is dark. All of a sudden, I'm seeing things that I've never seen before. I'm experiencing things that I've never experienced before. All of a sudden, there's a shaking of the grave. All of us know. All of us know that at the time when person goes into the grave, two angels by the name of Munkar and Nakir come for questioning. And this is what is said. As soon as the last person goes 40 steps, Munkar and Nakir come to ask the question. But this person from the grave is narrating something else. He's saying, Ya Rasulullah, after I was put into the grave, before Munkar and Nakir come, another angel comes inside by the name of Ruman. Detailed description I've mentioned in my majlis in Dar es Salaam. This is a small little reference. This is that same angel which Imam Sajjad in the book As-Sahifah Kamila, in dua number 3, which is a specific dua in which he sends salam on the major angels of Allah. The four angels, Mikael, Jibrail, Israfil and Israel. And then all the Hamalatul Arsh, those angels that carry the Arsh of God. And the angels who are referred to as Al-Malaikatul Muqarrabun. He's sending salawat upon them. And then amongst the course of this, he says, Wa ala Israfil, sahib surah shakhis, and salawat upon Israfil, who will blow the trumpet. And then he says, Wa ala munk malakil maut, wa a'wanihi, and my salams upon the angel of death and his companions. Wa ala munkarin, wa nakirin. And then he says, Wa ala ruman, fattan al qabr. And my salams upon this angel by the name of Ruman. Before Munkar and Nakir comes another angel by the name of Ruman. This person or this angel's job is to create a dossier, is to create a file for this man to be given to Munkar and Nakir for them to take on after this Ruman is left. Now this man is telling Salman al-Farsi. This tradition, very authentic, very prevalent, Usulul Kafi, Wasailu Shia, Biharul Anwar, references available with me. Person is talking to Salman al-Farsi and he is saying that when Ruman comes into the grave, he pushes my hand, he catches my hand and picks it up. Now when I was sleeping, he raises me and I'm in a sitting position. As I'm in a sitting position, I'm wondering, what is he going to do? Because I was expecting Munkar to come, Nakir to come, to start the questioning. This angel, I did not know. This angel comes, catches my hand, makes me sit in the grave, dark, alone, I'm sitting, terrified, don't know what is going to happen. At that time he shouts out, right. So I ask, right what? He's saying, write whatever you did in this world. I said, write whatever I did. I lived for 60, 70 years. What do you want me to write? See, everything, every second, every moment, every lamha, every kalima, every nakhla kadam, every step that you take, write it down. Say, I don't know, I don't remember. Say, I will dictate you, write. Say, how are you dictating me? How do I write? I don't have a page. Saying, as soon, he's telling Salman this, huh? As soon as I said this, he steps forward. He picks up my kafan, tears out my kafan. Saying, this is your paper. He's saying, hey, how do I write? Where is the pen? He's saying, sababatuka kalamuk. This finger is called sababa in Arabic. Saying, this is your kalam, this is your pen, write. If you start writing, this will write. He's saying, hey, this is the pen, where is the ink? He's saying, your saliva is your ink. Take the piece of kafan, put that finger into the mouth, pick up the saliva and write whatever I'm telling you. And he's telling me, she's telling Salman, I was made to write. Every single act of goodness that he would dictate, I would take the finger, put it into my mouth, take the piece of kafan and write, and it would write. And I would keep writing, and I would keep writing, and all the good deeds that he would dictate to me about me. Some I remembered, some I didn't remember. Big things I remembered, Hajj I remembered, Sadaqat I remembered, Ziyarat I remembered. But little aspect, walking on the road, putting hand on an orphan's head, walking on the road, moving a stone so that others are not inconvenienced, small things that I would forget, he would remember. He said, write down, on this day you move the stone, write it, it's a good act. On this day you moved your car so that the others could pass, good, a good deed, write it down. Things that I did not remember, he would dictate. As he would dictate, my pleasure would increase, my happiness would increase, because all good things are being mentioned, till a time comes when all the good deeds finish. Now he says, I'm going to give you the flip side of the coin. All evil acts that you did, write it down. Oh, on this day you did this, write it down. On this day you look at this woman, write it down. On this day you hit this person, you kicked this person, did ghiba of this person, you slandered this person, you passed out comments about this person. And as he would say, the overcoming of shame was too obvious. I would not want to write. Till a point came that as he kept increasing and talking about the evil deeds, my hand stopped writing. As he stopped writing, as I stopped writing, he says, write. And I said, I'm overcome by shame. I'm overcome by guilt. I'm overcome by shamefulness. These are the things that I did. I don't even remember them. He's saying, I will make you remember. Write it down. But then when I would refrain from writing, he picked up a mace. He picked up a big iron stick which was made of fire. He picked it up on his hand above his head as if about to strike me. And when I saw that mace of fire about to come on my head, I said, don't hit me, I will write it down. At that time he told me, when in this world you were given the freedom to do, and your God says, be careful of the day when every act will be brought to me, at that time you did not feel ashamed. Now that you have to write it down, you're feeling ashamed. Write whatever is there, I will dictate to you. And I wrote, and I wrote, and I wrote, and I felt, and I wanted the earth to split so that I could go deep inside. Nobody see me again. This is Ruman. He says, after I finished writing, he takes that piece of kafan and he puts it on my neck. As he put it on my neck, I felt as if the entire world's weight of the mountains were hanging around my neck. He says, now sleep, because this is what is going to act against you on the day of judgment. When the day of judgment comes, this would serve to be the book of deeds, because what is written by the angels will be compared by what this man has written. No way to object, no way to deny. The ruling of God will stand supreme. At that point of time, when this is going on, I will stop over here, because now this incident that has taken place, or this events that take place, this book now will be handed over to him. The book written by the two people, by the two angels, the good deeds, the bad deeds, which Quran says, وَتَرَى الْمُجْرِمِينَ مُشْفَقِينَ مِمَّا فِيهِ. When they see, they will be overcome by fright. Now this book will be handed over to him. This is your dossier. This is the file. This is on the basis of this you will be made to account. You have to go before your Lord. But there's a catch to it over here. Because the manner of giving the books will be different. This book, which is a dossier containing everything that man did in this world, on the basis of which he has to account, when it is given, this will determine the moment it is handed over to him. No, not the moment it is handed over to him. The manner in which it is handed over to him, he will know where he is going to go. Because tradition says this book of deeds will be given to the sinners in a different manner as opposed to the righteous persons. When it comes to the righteous persons, when it comes to people who have been obedient to Allah, when it comes to the people who are good, Quran says the book will be given to them in the right hand. When it comes to the case of the evil persons, the book will be given to the left hand. That is a clear indication for man to understand where he will land up. And this is the reason that when we are doing the wudu, at the time of doing the wudu, there are certain prescribed du'as that need to be recited. When you're washing the face, there is a du'a to be recited. When you're washing the hands, it's the du'a to be recited. When the left hand is washed, there's a du'a to be recited. Refer to those du'as. People in the madrasa, the boys would know. The madrasa teachers would have taught them. When you wash the right hand, you say, translation I'm giving, mafhum I'm giving, that, oh Allah, I'm washing my right hand on the day of judgment. When you're going to take me for accounting, give the book of deeds in my right hand. And when person washes the left hand, we plead to God, oh Allah, I am doing taharat for your sake, to come before me. As I wash my left hand, I beseech you and I plead you, do not give me the book of deeds in my left hand. Because the moment it is given to me in one of these hands, I know where my eternity lies, the countdown to eternity. And as soon as this book comes, the manner in which it will come a little later. But there are certain things that I just want to rewind. Because there are questions that are coming. That is there any solution for all this? Is there any way that we can excuse ourselves from all this? Is there any solution by means of which we can gain salvation? Yes. Right now we stop. Over here. Book of deeds given to the sinners, given to the pious persons. Their reaction we will see tomorrow. How the pious person will react upon receiving it in the right hand, we'll see tomorrow. What will be the words stated by the sinners when they get it in the left hand, we will see it tomorrow. But right now, a little rewinding of tape. Because, you remember, we started in the first night about death, and then slowly we moved towards the day of judgment. I want to go back. You know those punishments that we discussed about the graves. But God in His mercy, and as we've been mentioning, we are not going to touch immensely on the mercy of God upon the salvation, because this lecture will be going on the basis of innama anta mundir. You are a warner. Whatever is being warned, whatever things need to be stated to be warned, we are stating. But as we are going, few instances we will talk, which will explain how certain punishments can be avoided, how we can gain salvation from the punishments of the grave, how we can get salvation from the fright of the Qiyamah. The final lecture of Shabi Ashur will be discussing on that entire aspect about the Rahmat, but that will only be confined to the Wilayat of Ahlul Bayt. Because if we were to talk about all the Rahmat of God and all the bounties of God in the grave, in the Barzakh, in the Qiyamah, in the Jannah, it would require another 6 to 7 lectures, which we do not have. So we pick up one aspect and discuss it in detail. It is said, and if you remember, when we talked about the punishment of the grave and those instances when the grave would be filled up with fire and the snakes would come and the fishare qabr hatta taltaqiya azla'ahu, hatta the ribs meet each other. There have been instances where the masumin have told us certain actions serve to protect a person from these punishments. Certain actions protect us from these punishments. One is an action that I want to tell you. And I'm going to give you very simple ones. Not those very high funda ones that you might find very difficult to do. But at times, unfortunately, even those little things that have been told to us, we consider them so trivial that we say, significance of this. But listen, today is Shabbat Jumu'ah, right? Tomorrow is Jumu'ah. On the day of Jumu'ah,
there is a prescription, recommendation in the Tawdihul Masail, the ghusl of the day of Jummah. This is one ghusl that people take very lightly. Janabah, everybody wants to do it, because you cannot pray without that ghusl, right? Ghusl Jum'ah, because it is mustahab, people take it very trivial. They go to the shower, they don't make the niyah. Tradition says this punishment of the grave, you want to ward off one of the ways? Persist in ghusl Jum'ah. How long does it take to do ghusl Jum'ah? But the fact is that when things are told, we tend to take it so trivial. Say, ghusl Jum'ah was so chibana. Nobody remembers. People remember. Majority don't remember. Tradition says one way to protect a person from the azab of qabr, ensure that you regularly perform ghusl Jum'ah. How long does it take? Everybody takes a shower. It's just a matter of doing a niyat and 2-3 minutes of emphasis to ensure that the format is followed. But tradition says somebody who does ghusl Jum'ah every time persistently will be safe from the azab of qabr. One, this is action. One is recitation. It's like salat. In salat, salat is made up of two things. Af'al, standing up, sitting down. And adhkar, speaking out. So you recite alhamd, you recite kul huwallah adhkar. You do ruku, you do sajda, af'al. Similarly, one fail, ghusl Jum'ah you have to do. One recitation, tradition says. But I will not tell you the recitation now. I will tell you an incident. I hope another 5-10 minutes will not make a difference, right? Christmas Eve. Once at the time of the Holy Prophet, the Prophet is in the mosque. It's time of Maghrib. Maghrib prayers are finished, he's waiting for the Aisha prayers. All of a sudden, one of the companions of the Prophet comes running in a very aggravated state, overcome by anxiety, overcome by fear, apprehension, completely tensed. He comes into the mosque, straight to the Prophet. The other companions of the Prophet were there, totally disregarding. Just rushes straight to the Prophet. The companions, wonderstruck. He never behaves like this. Whenever he would pass, Salaamu Alaikum wa Rahmatullah, how are you, kaif al-hal? Now nothing. Head disheveled, state of anxiety, fear. Enters the Masjid al-Nabi, straight to the Prophet. Ya Rasulullah, Salaamun Alaikum, I've got a problem. Am I overcome by jinn? This is his question, huh? First statement after Salaam. Have I been overcome by jinn? Prophet says, what is wrong? Tell me. He says, no, I think I've been overcome by jinn. I want to know. What do you say? Have I been overcome by a jinn? Prophet says, calm down. Tell me what happened. He's saying, I was in a particular graveyard when it became time for the Maghrib prayers. At times the Prophet separated his prayers, at times he prayed it together. He's saying, at the time of my, it was time of Maghrib, I went to a Qabristan near a tree, I put up my musalla and started praying. When I finished praying, I usually had this, I decided that there's still time for Aisha prayers, so let me recite some surah. So I opened my Quran, came out Suratul Mulk. So I started deciding Suratul Mulk, near sitting near the tree. See, as soon as I finished reciting Suratul Mulk, suddenly a sound came to me. Thank you, my brother. Thank you, my brother, for reciting Suratul Mulk and saving me from the punishment of the fire of the grave. I look around, I don't see anybody. Suddenly I see and sense the sound is coming from a grave. At that time, I could not see anybody. I did not see any movement. It was in the darkness of the night. A little light from that little lamp in the graveyard. I was overcome by shock. Suddenly, who is talking to me? What have I done? That suddenly, because of this recitation of mulk, somebody is calling out from within the grave. Oh my brother, thank you for reciting Suratul Mulk, for you have stopped my punishment of the grave. Hearing this, I thought I was bewitched. I thought I was overtaken by a jinn. And so I have come to you. Ya Rasulullah, what do you think? Am I overcome by a jinn? Prophet says, no, you are not overcome by the jinn. So then the Sahabi asks him, then what was that sound? What was that sentence that I heard? Prophet says, listen, the place where you were sitting, there was a graveyard.
in that grave near which you were sitting belonged to a man from the ummah of Hazrat Ibrahim. He was a sinner. He was a person who was a fasik. From the time he had died, he was in the grave. He was being punished in Barzakh. Fortunately, you happened to sit at that place and you picked up the Suratul Mulk to recite. Suratul Mulk has a quality, it has a virtue, that whoever recites Suratul Mulk at that time, that place where a person is sitting gets so overcome, becomes the place of the rahmat of God, that not only the person who recites Suratul Mulk gets encompassed by the mercy of God, but the people around a certain radius where this person is reciting Suratul Mulk becomes encompassing of that rahmat that is overflowing as a result of recitation of Suratul Mulk. When you recited Suratul Mulk, the mercy of God came down in such measure that not only were you encompassed, but that inhabitant of the grave also became encompassed with the mercy of God, as a result of which his punishment was taken away. Suratul Mulk. You read Suratul Mulk, hardly 7 minutes it will take. It's recommended to read it every night before sleeping. A big task. You should give us some solution that we shall be saved from the punishment of the grave. Hope this is a solution for the punishment of the grave. But something we have to apply. Everything is not a magical wand that you just move it and the punishment goes away. Something has to be done. One, ghusle jumu'ah. Second, Suratul Mulk. Recite Suratul Mulk. It is said, Nuzulur Rahmah. Mujibu li Nuzulur Rahmah. You recite Suratul Mulk, it becomes as a shower of Rahmah coming. Not only upon me, if I'm reading, but if my wife is there, it will encompass her. If my children are there, it will encompass us. And it is always recommended that when something is being done of this nature, when something is being done of goodness, don't do it alone. Don't do it alone. Call your wife, come. Shabi Jumu'ah. After the madras, you go home. You have to recite Hadith Kisa. If you recite Dua Kumal, very good. But you want to do some more amal, don't do it alone. Call your wife, sit down. Not for the wife, for the children. Call your children, sit down. These little children, again I keep emphasizing, you and me recite Dua Kumal, Ziyarat wa Aratha. The ziyarat of the Abul Fadl, of Ali Akbar, of the Shuhada, of everything, because of what? We learned it from our stomachs, the stomach of the mothers. No, when the fathers would read, they would call us, sit down, Sheikh. That time Sheikh was not Sheikh. Sit down and listen. That's what we need to do. Because this is what has been taught to us by the Ahlul Bayt. Last night we discussed one of the child, two of the children. Today there's another one. Shah Qasim. You have to understand, we have to understand that this obligation towards these children are immense. People would go to such extents to make sure that the children are brought up nicely. You just don't sit with them when you're watching serials and when you're reciting Quran, you let them play video games and you recite the Quran. Or I recite the Quran. I tell myself, because this pulpit that I'm sitting, it is not for you. It is for myself. It gives me an opportunity to tell myself, Sheikh, you may have read something a year back, 2 years back. You need to be reminded this is coming. And the training that the Ahlul Bayt would do, it can be seen in Shah Qasim's case. When did it start? When the child became baligh? No. When the child became 9 years, 10 years? No. It was, preparations were made when Qasim, ideally it started well before the birth of Qasim, but it came in our purview when Qasim was less than 1 year old. You know, when this was the time when Hassan alayhi salam was about to pass away, having been given the poison, he was on the verge of going away. At that time Qasim was less than even 1 year old, huh? At that time, Hassan writes something on a piece of paper. It is referred to as a ta'weed. And ties it on his hand. Tells his wife, Farwa, when situation becomes very bad, when you find the world falling upon your head, this letter of mine will help you. When he is less than a year old.
And from the time he was a child, Farwa would always tell Qasim, this is what your father has said. When you are in big trouble, this is going to be your solution. Till time comes, he becomes big. Upbringing of Farwa, we will see. Time comes, he joins the caravan of Hussain. Hussain goes from Medina to Makkah, Makkah to Karbala. Seventh night. You know what night this is? This is not just a night of Shah Qasim. You know the reality of this night? Tonight is the night whereby all water is stopped upon the Ahlul Bayt. You know what it means to say that water is stopped upon the Ahlul Bayt? You want me to put it very crudely? It means that on the plains of Karbala, the birds that fly in the air can drink the water of Euphrates. The animals in the wilderness can drink the water of Euphrates. The insects that grovel into the sand can drink the water of Euphrates. But Sakina cannot drink the water of Euphrates. Asghar will get no water. This is the 7th of Muharram. 7th of Muharram passes. 8th of Muharram passes. 9th of Muharram passes. 3 days no water. Sakina is still 3-4 years old. Asghar is 6 months old, huh? You want to know what happened to Asghar? Not tonight. Shabi Ashur, I will tell you. 3 days of no water, what happened to Asghar, I will tell you. But right now, it's the night of Ashur. In this time of night, the entire camp of Hussein at the time starts humming like the humming of the bees. Tradition says, sounds would come as the humming of the bees. Means what? Some people reciting the Quran. Some people reciting the dhikr. Some people reciting dua. Some people reciting salat. Humming of the bees. All engaged in worship. Till such a time that Hussein calls all of them. Two things he does. He calls them, come. First of all, again the same thing that I mentioned at the time of Habib ibn Madhad. He's saying, look, you are not required to be with me. They don't want your blood. They want my blood. Go. He switches off the light. I give you an opportunity. Don't feel ashamed. I'm switching off. Nobody will see you going. Go. Save your life. Nobody goes. Say, Yabna Rasulullah, what is life for us after we have left you? And if you have died, then what is this life for us? Nobody goes. Then he says, now that you have decided to stay with me, I'm going to tell you. He starts calling out the list of shuhada. He's saying, Habib, you're going to become shaheed. Muslim ibn Awsajah, you're going to become shaheed. Zuhair, you're going to become shaheed. Burair, you're going to become shaheed. When the entire list was taken, suddenly a small sound comes from the corner. Uncle, what about me, Qasim? Is my name not on the list of people who are going to become shaheed? Imagine what would have happened at Hussein's heart, tell me. The son of the brother is asking him, will I be dying tomorrow? He calls him, hugs him, and he says, Qasim, before I answer you, tell me one thing. We want to know now how training of children should be. Listen, he asks, I will tell you about your shahadat afterwards. You answer my question first. Tell me, kaifa indakal maut? How do you perceive death in these circumstances that you are asking me, will I become shaheed? And you know what he says? Ahla min al-asal. If I have to die in your path, then it is sweeter than death. This is what a 10 or 13 year old boy is saying. This is the training given to him by the family of Ahlul Bayt. Those PSPs and video games is one side. This training is another side that we need to give. He says, Qasim, not only you are going to die, but your small Asghar is also going to die tomorrow. Talk finished. Next day morning. Next day morning, he knows now that he's going to be shaheed. So every time in the morning, he comes to Hussain. Uncle, please let me go. Hussain says, I cannot let you go. Comes back. After some time, Uncle, please let me go for battle. He says, no. But why? See, because you're the sign of my brother Hassan. Hassan is not there. I look at you, I'm reminded of Hassan. I'm reminded of my brother. I cannot let you go. When this keeps happening, he comes to his mother and says, Mother, I'm not getting permission to go. What do I do? The mother said, you forget what was said to you, what was given to you. There was a time when Imam Hassan had put a ta'weez and said that when times become very bad and you find no way out, open this, it will give you a solution.
What time could be worse that you want to be shaheed for Hussain, but you cannot? They open it. As Qasim opens it, and as he, remember, he's perturbed now, he's disturbed, he's not being allowed to go. But as soon as he opens that letter, his face blushes. His face glows. Because Hassan had written over there to Qasim. He's saying, Qasim, Ida kana yawmu Ashura. A time on the day of Ashura will come when my brother Hussain will be surrounded by enemies and there will be a very few people to support him. At that time, do not turn away from fighting for him and giving up your life for him. As soon as Qasim sees this, his face goes flush. He goes running to the tent of Hussain. He says, Uncle, you have to give me permission now. You will have to give me permission. Hussain says, what has happened, Qasim? He's saying, my father has written this letter. He's saying, show it to me. Hassan Hussain takes it. As soon as he sees the writing of his brother Hussain, oh Hassan, he goes back decades in memory. He remembers those times when both Hassan and Hussain were small little children playing with the Holy Prophet. He remembers those times when both of them were being carried by the Prophet. He remembers those times when the Prophet would become a horse and they would sit on it. Now he's reminded, oh Hassan is not there. Worse, Hassan's son Qasim has to go for battle. When he sees this, he sees the face of Qasim happy. He reads the letter, he begins to cry. At that time when he sees the Imam Hussain crying, Qasim begins to cry. Tradition says, both hug each other and they cry. And they cry. And they cry. And tradition says, they cry so much, Ghoshaya alayhima, both fall down in unconscious. Nowhere on the battle of Karbala or the plains of Karbala you would find Hussain having fallen down unconscious except this occasion. Because now he realizes the only sign of his brother Hassan is going to die. But now when he sees that letter, he realizes this has been the ruling of Imam Hassan. He calls Zainab and says, Zainab, come here. Get me that little casket. What is in the casket? He opens it. He takes out the amama of Imam Hassan. Puts it on Qasim. Takes out the riba of Imam Rida of Imam Hassan. Puts it on Qasim. Qasim is small, 13-year-old. He's not even big enough to climb onto an Arabian horse by himself. Tradition says, Hussain picks him up and puts him onto the horse. As he comes out, Hamid ibn Muslim, one of the soldiers in the army of Yazid, Hamid ibn Muslim says, at this time I saw the curtain move, and a boy come out, Qasim, he looked as if a moon was coming out of the tent. I'm asking you one thing. Hamid ibn Muslim was not from the companions of Imam Hussain. He was an enemy. But when an enemy says Qasim was looking like a moon, what would have gone on the heart of Farwa, the mother of Qasim? But Qasim goes on to the battlefield. As he starts fighting, that Bani Hashim, he's got the blood of Ali in him, he starts fighting. He goes deep into the enemy territory, till all of a sudden, they encircle him. A person comes from behind and strikes him on the head with a sword. As the sword strikes Qasim, Qasim falls onto the ground and he calls out, Ya Amma, Adarikni, oh Uncle Hussain, please help me. As soon as Hussain heard, there was Abbas standing, there was Akbar standing, Hussain says, Abbas come, Akbar come, my son of my brother Hassan is dying there. They rush forward. Hussain catches hold of the man who had hit Qasim and he strikes off his hand. As soon as he strikes off his hand, he calls out, oh people, oh friends, I am being attacked, help me. As soon as this voice comes out of help, there's chaos on the battlefield. People from the left move running towards the people or towards the right. Those soldiers on the right move towards left. Where is Qasim? Qasim is onto the ground. Horses moving over his body. From left to right, from right to left. And this is what Imam Zamana in Ziyarat al-Nahiya says, my salam upon that shaheed whose right ribs moved into the left ribs, whose left ribs moved into the right ribs. Are a shaheed Hussain, the Hassan's son, Qasim is gone. Hussain goes, he sees son, the sign of Hassan Nahi, the sign of the horse's hoops on his body. This was one shaheed who before dying was trampled. As this happens, he picks up the clash of Qasim. Hussain doesn't know what to do. 13-year-old boy, little body, delicate body, trampled by the hooves of horses. Should I take it to Farwa? Should I not take it to Farwa? He decides, let me take it to Farwa. Picks up the lash of Qasim, brings it near the tent. He's covered it with his abba. Farwa comes to know. Lash of Qasim has come. She comes up. Says, Aka, show me my son. Hussein does not. Says, Aka, I want to see my son. Hussein says, Farwa, you will not be able to bear it. He's saying, I've got enough sabr, show me my son. He opens, as he opens, she sees the lash. She doesn't cry. She calls out, Zainab, come here. Ruqayya, come here. Kulsoom, come here. Sakina, come here. Give me Mubarakis. My son is trampled. My sacrifice has been accepted. The most of all, the lash of my son has been trampled like the lash of no other shaheed. Oh my Qasim. Wa Qasim. Wa musibata. سيعلم الذين ظلموا أي منقلب ينقلبون لعنة الله على القوم الظالمين ما تسمع